morning, Dr. Birnbaum. Cancer Action New York provides information to the public on dioxin exposure and breast cancer risk. I would like to speak with you about the Warner article and the Fenton article, which are provided in our cancer prevention outreach. In 2002, a research article titled Serum Dioxin Concentrations and Breast Cancer Risk in the Seveso Women's Health Study by Dr. Marcella Warner was published in Environmental Health Perspectives, the Journal of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences. Please describe for the listeners the findings of this study.
This is the first study to show a clear dose-related increase in the incidence of breast cancer in a population exposed to levels of dioxin that were quite high. This population was a population that lived in an area near Milan in Italy called Seveso, and there was a large industrial explosion that occurred there in 1976, where a lot of dioxin was basically sprayed, emitted from the plant, and settled in the area. And that population has been followed now for over 30 years. This study that was published in 2002 by the group from Berkeley in collaboration with the folks from the Seveso study was the first where they actually, it's part of something called the Seveso Women's Reproductive Health Study, and in that study they're following a population of several hundred women who were exposed at the time. And the uniqueness of this study is they actually have internal measurements, blood measurements, of the levels of dioxin to which these women were exposed. So it's a clear study. The numbers were relatively small because this analysis, I mean, these women were actually examined in the mid-1990s. This study is being followed up. There's work continuing on this study. My understanding, and I would suggest that you talk to Marcy Warner or Brenda Eskenazi, who's one of the senior authors on that paper. Both of them are still at the University of California, Berkeley, about what they're finding in their follow-up study. But they are continuing to follow this group of women, again, where we have clear evidence for an association between exposures to dioxins and breast cancer. Now, I should mention that there are a number of other studies that show this association, but none are so strong, and in large part it's because the others don't actually have the actual measurements of the levels of the dioxins in the women's blood.
Well, you've been very enlightening and very clear about what is set forth in the Warner paper. Let's discuss the Fenton paper now. In 2002, together with Dr. Suzanne Fenton of USEPA's National Health and Environmental Effects Research Laboratory, you published a research paper titled Persistent Abnormalities in the Rat Mammary Gland Following Gestational and Lactational Exposure to 2,3,7,8 tetrachlorodibenzo-P dioxin. What were the conclusions you set forth in this paper, Dr. Birnbaum?
This paper was, in some ways, I would say kind of a new direction. We had let me back up a second. There was a paper published in 1998 by a group from the University of Alabama at Birmingham. Carole Martinet was the senior author on that paper. The first author was Brown. And those authors demonstrated that if they exposed rats prenatally to dioxin, and then they treated the offspring when they were young adults with a type of polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbon, something called DMBA, which is known, which can cause breast cancer. They found a tremendous increase in the tumors in the dioxin-exposed rats. We were interested in exploring what might be going on here. And I have had a long history in looking at developmental exposures to dioxin. And Sue Fenton is an expert in mammary gland development. So we decided to do something together, which we would expose the animals during pregnancy basically expose their moms to a relatively low dose of dioxin and see what happened to the mammary gland, what happened to its development. And what we found out was that the prenatal dioxin totally altered the development of the mammary gland. So by the time the mammary gland, by the time the rat pup was an adult, the structure of the mammary gland was very different than the structure in a normal adult. And we believe that, in fact, this explained the differential or the extreme susceptibility of the adult mammary gland to the DMBA that had been observed in the Brown et al. Study of 1998. We also were able to show that this altered structure of the mammary gland had impacts on the next generation, because the mammary gland had many few ducts, so the pup, when it grew up, was much less able to produce milk for its offspring. So we noticed that there was a difference in the second generation because their moms had difficulty lactating.
That's very interesting, Dr. Birnbaum. And it's clear that, you know, this is work with rats and not human beings, but this matter of being predisposed to develop breast cancer later in life, you know, at a much greater risk of that being, you know, demonstrated by the research, it's very important, and I'm certain that many women will be very interested in this study. You are the current director of NIEHS. How do these studies influence the activities of the Institute?
Well, I've only been here, it's 4 months today, but in fact, I would say that our paper and then a subsequent paper that I published again with Dr. Fenton in Environmental Health Perspectives in 2003 has had an impact on how research is being conducted, not only at the NIEHS, but kind of in many places. We raised the question in our 2003 paper, were we treating animals at the wrong time to look for susceptibility to cancer and other effects, and then raised the question about epidemiology studies in people, were we again looking for an association between levels of chemicals in people, in other words, people's exposure, and the time that they got cancer. Many studies are done when someone, for example, goes to the clinic with a problem and you measure what's in their body at that point in time. But we know that cancer has a very long latency, a minimum of about 10 years. In many cases, it could be 40 years. So if you're looking for something that causes cancer or changes the susceptibility to cancer, you have to have information about what happened in the past. So there's an entire relatively new field of emphasis looking at the latent effects of early life exposure, realizing that the developing infant in utero, during infancy, during puberty, is at extra susceptibility to effects of external stressors, whether it's chemicals or maybe just stress in general. So we have quite a number of those kinds of studies that are going on at this institute. We have a program that we've been running for 6 years that we're going to be extending, which we do in concert with the National Cancer Institute, related to breast cancer and the environment. And we have a series of breast cancer and environment centers, which involve a basic science core, which looks at animal studies, a human core, which conducts human studies, and a community outreach core in which we work with community partners to understand their concerns and communicate them the findings of our studies.
Well, you've nearly answered my next question, so I'll ask it anyways and just see if, you know, we can go a little further with, you know, what is possible in the future rather than just what is being done right now. These research articles were published nearly 7 years ago. Very few women know of their existence. Can NIEHS ensure that such important information becomes more widely known at a much faster pace? And I know that what you're talking about will help out on that, but do you have any dreams about how this can be done faster and more widely spread?
Well, it's interesting you should raise that issue, because we are just preparing to develop what's called a request for proposal or request for application, where we are going to ask people exactly how we can improve the communication of our research findings, especially in this area. So we expect within about a year or so, we will be getting proposals back that we will fund groups to actually work on this very topic of improving the communication of these kinds of findings to the larger lay community.
Should women reduce their intake of dairy products containing milk fat, meats, and eggs, all of which are contaminated with dioxin and dioxin-like compounds?
You know, our recommendations for the last 15 or 20 years have been to eat a healthy heart diet. And that does mean a balanced diet with restricted amounts of animal fat in your diet, but certainly you want to get a lot of your, you know, you can have protein from these different sources, but we do recommend eating a healthy heart diet with lots of fruits and vegetables and whole grains and appropriate amounts of protein and so on. But, you know, many of the sources, milk, meat, and eggs are all very, very good sources of protein, but we recommend not eating a lot of animal-based fats.
And this is because of the dioxin content, not the healthy heart aspect of this?
No, I think that if you follow the guidelines for a healthy heart, you also help have less intake of dioxins and other persistent chemicals that are similar in properties to the dioxin.
Understood. One last question, and it's a surprise question, and I hope that's okay with you. We'll just try to make this a little bit more exciting as we can. There is nothing about dioxin exposure breast cancer risk in the public information set forth by the National Comprehensive Cancer Control Program. This program is directed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Can the Institute of Environmental Health Sciences help move the CDCP to supplement the National Cancer Control Program so as to include dioxins and other pollutant carcinogens?
Well, the answer is I don't know, but we could certainly try. I would appreciate if you would send me some information on that, and I will be happy to follow up. I should mention that many of these dioxin studies I talked about with that population in Seveso, Italy, some of the major co-authors from that paper were from the CDC. So there is a lot of cross-federal government interactions on these topics, but if you send me the information, I will be happy to follow up on it.
I'll do that, Dr. Birnbaum. Really appreciate your voice here on cancer prevention and dealing with pollutant carcinogens, and I hope that we have many, you know, valuable to the public interactions as these days progress.
Thank you, Donald, and I look forward to future interactions.